Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 25th, 2020. Section A. MISD. MISD updates students return to campus. Elementary school students can return full-time by October 5th. Secondary students on November 9th. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstMP.com. Midland ISD announced Thursday that all Midland ISD students wanting to return to campus 5 days a week will be able to do so by November 9th. The announcement calls for the elimination of blended learning for elementary school students by October 5th and for secondary school students by November 9th. Blended learning was the term given to a schedule that called for students to be on campus 2 days a week and learning virtual the other 3 school days. Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon told the Reporter Telegram that the district wasn't meeting the community's expectations for academic rigor and was taking action to bring students back to campus to change that. In order to provide an option for parents worried about the coronavirus pandemic, the district will still provide its online academy, which is undergoing changes to its structure. The district released a timeline for what parents, students, and employees should expect. October 2nd is the deadline for parents of secondary school students to choose between having their students engaged in on-campus learning or learning virtually through the Midland ISD Online Academy. Parents must complete the Google form on the campus website if they wish to make a change. October 5th, students in grades 3 through 6 except 6th grade at San Jacinto Junior High and Young Women's Leadership Academy will return to on-campus learning 5 days per week. Pre-kindergarten through 2nd grade are already on campus 5 days a week. Also on October 5th, all junior high schools, and Young Women's Leadership Academy, including 6th graders at SJ and YWLA, will return to campus learning Monday through Thursday. Friday instruction will be virtual learning. On November 9th, all secondary campuses will resume on-campus learning 5 days per week, and online academy course offerings may change based on participation and will be transitioned to teachers dedicated for MOA. Early College High School will maintain its own online academy. Dixon said Thursday that elementary schools are returning sooner because students can be assigned to one class all day, whereas high schools have different scheduling. The district reported Thursday that its COVID-19 mitigation efforts will remain in place, including the mandatory wearing of masks for students in 3rd through 12th grade for whom it is developmentally appropriate. There have been 21 new coronavirus cases involving MISD employees or students reported since September 15th and 39 this month. Dixon told the Reporter Telegram that it is still important to balance education and health, and that is why the online academy should continue. She clarified Thursday that the academy exists only as a reason for parents to have a choice when it comes to the health of their children. Around the community, the number of coronavirus cases has dropped since early August, when outgoing Superintendent Orlando Riddick announced the decision to start school with at-home learning. There were 414 corona cases announced during the first full week of August. Last week, the Midland Health Department reported 110. The percentage of positive cases also has dropped by more than a half, according to health officials. Earlier this week, the district reported a total enrollment of 25,417. That included 4,480 enrolled in the online academy. While Dixon said there are reports of other districts across the state eliminating the online academy model, she told the Reporter-Telegram she expects MISD will allow students to stay in it through the entire year. She said everything will be evaluated at the end of the first semester. Midland Online Academy will be overhauled by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstMP.com. Midland's ISD's efforts to educate students online has not been meeting the community's expectations for academic rigor, starting with the district's online committee, Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon said on Thursday. Her assessment is in line with comments from district leaders, parents, campus leaders, and teachers about the problems with Midland ISD Online Academy. During this week's school board meeting, district leaders pressed central office staff about deficiencies in the academy, including staffing and academic achievement issues. Some of those issues came to light Thursday as Dixon told the Reporter-Telegram the failure rate in Midland ISD Online Academy was running between 60 and 70%. She also said that while the high school attendance rate typically averages around 96%, it has been around 90% for those participating online. Other issues are problems with teacher scheduling, the inability to monitor student participation, and breaks from protocols, including reports that some principals were having to make as many as 20 changes to online and blended learning rosters a day when the plan was to allow changes to happen during a small window. The first 6 weeks looks dismal, Dixon said. Dixon also said those participating in blended learning, in which students attend class on campus 2 days a week and participate in at-home learning the other 3 days, are not receiving the necessary instruction when they are off campus. The current state of the program, which has been in place since the start of school on August 19th, was not what district leaders expected. The online academy appeared to be in transition since planning began. District leaders talked at the board meeting about how the academy could not deviate from the curriculum offered on a student's assigned campus. Also, there weren't separate teacher rosters as was originally expected. An announcement Thursday from the district focused on school's reentry plan, but Dixon said it was important to communicate the issues with the online academy. She said it was important to note that from this point forward, the teachers would be assigned to face-to-face learning or the online academy. If a student moves from one to the other, the teachers will follow, so the same resources are there to allow for a curriculum in the same rigor, whether a student was on campus or at home. That is something we haven't been able to monitor well, Dixon said. She said there may be occasions when online classes from different campuses might be combined so there are a sufficient number of students to make up a class. She used the example of French 4, for which there might not be enough students taking it online at just Lehigh or Midland High. We can refocus now, Dixon said. Stronger teachers might be put in difficult delivery systems, knowing they might be coming back to campus eventually. Dixon said the changes to the online academy was a case of leadership having conversations with principals about the status of the program and the need to do what was best for teachers and to achieve academic success. She said all district employees are focused on the academy as the sole option for elementary school students not wanting to be on campus beginning October 5th and for secondary students beginning November 9th. She also said that it was important to communicate to the public that the online academy exists as alternative because of the coronavirus pandemic. Lastly, she said there isn't time to waste as the corona pandemic has put educators behind. She said the students cannot continue to fall further behind after losing months of instruction, especially in a district struggling with performance. We have to step it up, Dixon said. Coleman High to celebrate life of school's namesake. From staff reports. Today marks what would have been the 101st birthday of Dr. Viola Coleman. A celebration of her life is planned for 2 p.m. at the Midland ISD campus that bears her name. "This is the celebration of the day a star was born," said Kenya Thomas, a special advisor at Coleman High School, in a press release. "Everything this woman stood for involved the building up of the community." The former Viola Mary Johnson was born in Louisiana and graduated from college at the age of 19. She attended medical school in Tennessee because it wasn't an option for an African-American woman at the time in Louisiana. Johnson married Raymond Coleman in 1951. When the couple moved to Midland in the early 50s, she was the city's only African-American doctor. Coleman practiced medicine for more than 50 years and was instrumental in integrating the staff at Midland Memorial Hospital. "Dr. Coleman would never refuse a patient because of their inability to pay," Thomas said. "She was the type of person who would put the needs of others ahead of her own." Coleman died in 2005 at the age of 86. We really want to get the word out about Dr. Coleman and her legacy," said CHS Principal David Moore in the release. "Her successes should be an inspiration for our students as well as the community." Coleman's son, Conrad Coleman, is among those expected to attend celebration at the campus, 1600 East Golf Course Road. Health. Hospital CEO encouraged by lack of Labor Day bump, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Labor Day bump in the number of coronavirus cases? Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said there has been one, but it could be worse. Myers, during his weekly press call on Thursday, said that the period a bump could occur could continues through Monday, but he expected the numbers to ramp up just a little bit more than they have. He said the combination of the holiday and students returning to on-campus schooling could have meant higher totals, but coronavirus statistics show that the Labor Day bump isn't close to what was experienced after Memorial Day and the 4th of July. The Midland Health Department showed 85 new cases in coronavirus through Wednesday. That is 44% increase compared to 2 weeks ago. Still, the pace is closer to 120 and not 241, the total 3 weeks after Memorial Day, or 418, the total 3 weeks after July 4th. "I'm encouraged by that," Myers said. "I hope that it means that our citizens are continuing to follow the careful social distancing guidelines, staying out of crowds, staying in ventilated spaces when they have to be in a crowd, all of the wearing a mask and washing their hands, all of the measures that we've all been taking for several months now that have controlled the disease outbreak in this community to a great extent. As long as those things are still happening, then we can keep a lid on growth. We're hopeful about that. The risk isn't over yet, but it's been encouraging so far." Other highlights from Myers' weekly press conference. Test volumes are increasing, according to Myers, averaging around 70 a day. Along with increased testing are increased percentages of people testing positive. 2 weeks ago, the percentage was 8. Last week, it increased to the mid-9s. So far this week, we're over 11% of those being tested are positive. That's potentially significant. Meyer said a few places where people are congregating are seeing positive coronavirus. He specifically mentioned the Rock House, which provides a place for people with developmental disabilities and related conditions, and the Midland County Jail. Neither have resulted in hospitalizations. There are 7 COVID inpatients, 3 in critical care and 4 in the COVID unit. There's only one person from Ashton Medical Lodge. Meyer said there are 4 MMH employees known to be COVID positive and are being quarantined. There are another 13 who have had some level of exposure and are self-monitoring, but not in quarantine. There have been 3 students test positive at MMH testing sites, all of them between 14 and 17. Meyer said the hospital census in general was actually pretty high, 179 patients. That included 11 people in critical care. He said there are four other employees who are in quarantine for other purposes. State and local news. Burger House closes after 8 years from staff reports. Basin Burger House has closed its doors after 8 years, as evidenced by the for sale sign out front. The popular burger and brunch spot on Colorado Street was a gathering place for trivia nights and young professionals. The Green Chili Burger was featured in Texas Monthly's The 50 Greatest Burgers in Texas in 2016. The partners took an empty 1930s-era house, remodeled, and expanded it to include a kitchen and patio, according to previous articles in the MRT. The interior was decorated with photos of native Midlanders, including oil man H.L. Brown and former First Lady Laura Bush. A temporary closing notice was posted March 24th on the restaurant's Facebook page. Trucks with oversized loads hit I-20 bridge, from staff reports. Two trucks carrying oversized loads hit the same Interstate 20 bridge Thursday afternoon, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. The first truck hit the Cotton Flat Road bridge at about 3 p.m. The driver, later identified as Midlander Ray Hanna, fled the scene, according to the release. He was apprehended at I-20 and Loop 250. Hanna, who works for 3S Westex Trucking and Transport, was cited for overheight and overweight group of axles and received warnings for fail to secure heavy machinery, failure to secure load, tire load exceeds weight, rating, federal violation, over allowed gross weight, striking the bridge, and over tire size limitation. While Midland police officers were investigating that crash, a second truck with an oversized load struck the bridge, causing minimal but to no damage, according to the release. The Lightning Services driver, Brian Nemchek of Geary, was cited for overheight, failing to inspect emergency equipment warnings for striking the bridge, and no warning devices. Both vehicles were placed on a federal out-of-service order, according to the release. Texas Department of Transportation said the bridge strikes have forced closure of westbound lanes of I-20, as well as overpass at Cotton Flat Road. Traffic will be diverted to the North Service Road until engineers can assess the damage that has been done to all four beams supporting the overpass. The opinion page. GOP finds Obama was right. Elections do have consequences. Elections have consequences. It might have been the most accurate statement of the Barack Obama presidency. Obama uttered those three words while leaving Republicans in the dark when it came to a stimulus bill. The gist is simple. To the winner goes the spoils. And this week, it is hard not to think about those three little words. Elections have consequences. With the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Donald Trump will nominate his third justice to the Supreme Court and seal his legacy as one of the most pro-life political figures in history. Elections certainly do have consequences. We sometimes miss this concept. While the focus is on the presidential race, November is equally important for Texas Republicans because the state legislature will tackle redistricting during the next session, which starts in January, and controlling the House during that process is unbelievably critical. If you ask Democrats, one of the greatest legacies of Obama's 8 years in the White House is the following: 13, 816, 48, and 194. Those numbers represent the numbers of governors, 13, state legislative seats lost, 816, the number of seats held in the U.S. Senate, 48, down from 60, and seats held in the U.S. House, 194, down from 257. elections at the regional and state level can have consequences as well. And those consequences, the flipped Senate, were felt in 2016 when Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell flexed his political muscle and said a vote on the next Supreme Court justice should not be held during an election year. 4 years later, he had a change of heart. It was a classic move. As a friend recently told me, McConnell is a politician's politician. I agree. All I could think about this week is that elections have consequences. Keep that in mind when it's time to head to the polls. Editor Stuart Doreen. Why Conservatives Care More About the Supreme Court, by Ramesh Ponnuru. Liberals, who wonder why they are poised to lose the battle for the Supreme Court, have noticed an asymmetry in the politics of judicial confirmations. For at least a generation, conservatives have cared about the courts a lot more than they have. You can see it in the exit polls from the presidential election of 2016. Voters who chose their candidate on the basis of judicial appointments broke heavily for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. Or you can review the campaign rhetoric that year. Trump regularly said that appointing a conservative replacement for Justice Antonin Scalia, who had just died, was a top issue in the campaign. At the Democratic Convention, by contrast, Clinton drove liberal legal activists to despair by not even mentioning that President Barack Obama had nominated a replacement, Judge Merrick Garland, and that Republicans had refused to consider his nomination. The 2020 campaign started out replicating that difference in emphasis. Trump released list after list of potential Supreme Court nominees, while Joe Biden has rebuffed Trump's challenge to do the same. One theory we will probably hear to explain this pattern is that conservatives have been losing political support in the population as well, and therefore seek to use the courts to entrench their preferred policies. But conservatives have cared about the courts more than the liberals in favorable political seasons and unfavorable ones. I suspect the real explanation lies in three related facts. First, the politics of the judiciary is largely the politics of abortion, and the issue has consistently been a higher priority for opponents than for supporters. Second, Republicans have repeatedly been disappointed by Republican-appointed justices in a way Democrats haven't. Republican appointees have made up a majority of the Supreme Court continuously since 1970, with a brief exception for an evenly divided eight-justice court in 2016-17. But Republican appointees have frequently voted with liberals on high-profile issues such as abortion, affirmative action, and same-sex marriage. Some of the Republican appointees have even made a point of retiring when a Democratic president could pick their replacement. By contrast, Democratic appointees rarely stray. The last Democratic appointee to disagree with Roe v. Wade, which established a constitutional right to abortion in 1973, joined the Supreme Court in 1962. Controversies at the Supreme Court have more frequently involved decisions to impose liberal policies and forbid conservative ones than vice versa. Conservatives haven't been suing the state of California to get it to end abortion. Liberals have been suing Louisiana to make them allow it in the years before 2015, when the Supreme Court said all governments had to recognize same-sex marriages. Nobody ever tried to get the federal courts to stop any state from recognizing them. There are, of course, exceptions. Conservatives have sought to get courts to strike down liberal policies on guns, campaign finance, and affirmative action, among other things. The difference, leaving aside the vital question of who's right on the legal merits of the individual policies, is that conservatives have not been very successful in getting courts to end policies in which millions of liberal voters are invested. Not many voters care about campaign finance regulations. The courts have not banned race-conscious college admission policies. Getting the Supreme Court to rule that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to own guns was one of the conservatives' biggest judicial victories. But even it can be exaggerated. So far, the court has allowed most restrictions on guns to stand and struck down only full gun bans. The Supreme Court is not the main reason liberals have failed to pass gun restrictions, whereas it is the main obstacle to laws against abortion or laws allowing organized school prayer. Conservative voters have thus repeatedly had the experience of winning hard-fought political contests in referendums and legislatures, and then seeing the courts snatch away their policy gains. Liberal voters, by and large, have not. Grievance is a powerful motivating force in politics. Even as Republican presidents have appointed justice after justice, the Supreme Court has created more of it for the right than for the left. It doesn't have to keep doing that forever. Maybe the Supreme Court will move in the future to strike down the Affordable Care Act or other elements of the welfare state, and liberals will start to view judicial appointments with the same urgency that conservatives do. If that happens, though, one reason will be that conservatives, after drawing the short straw for 50 years of judicial action, finally had enough. Obituaries and death notices. Gerald Adkins, 94, of Midland, passed away peacefully in his home Tuesday, September 22nd. Viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, September 25th, at Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held Saturday, September 26th at 10 a.m. at the funeral home. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Guy Wayne Fitzgerald, 68, of Midland, passed away on September 17th. A memorial service will be held on Monday, September 28th at 4 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. Linda Sue Wade of Midland, formerly of Sweetwater, passed away on Wednesday, September 23rd, at Midland Memorial Hospital. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 26th, at Sweetwater Cemetery. McCoy Funeral Home in Sweetwater is in charge of arrangements. Skipper Burns passed away on September 8th. At the age of 74. Per his wishes, there will be a gravesite service with his family on September 26th at Lovington Cemetery through Smith Rogers Funeral Home in Lovington, New Mexico.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, September 25, 2020. So many items on sale. Shoppers peruse items at the Texas Size Garage Sale on October 13, 2018. The annual fundraiser for Meals on Wheels kicks off October 7. Texas Size Garage Sale to include exclusive experience. The Texas Size Garage Sale, a fundraiser for Meals on Wheels, will begin October 7 with an exclusive shopping experience, according to a press release from Senior Life. Cocktails and snacks will be served at the event, which is 5 to 7 p.m. Tickets are $50 and are available at eventbrite.com or by calling Tracy Renton or Kathleen Kerwan Haney at 689-6693. For the general public, the garage sale will be presented on 6 days, with 2 sessions each day, 9 to 11 a.m. and noon to 2 p.m. October 9, 10, 13, 15, 20, and 22. Only 100 people will be allowed in during each session to allow for social distancing, according to a release. All shoppers will be required to wear masks, said Renton, Senior Life Development Director. The garage sale is at 407 East Scarborough Drive. annual West Texas Breast Symposium is virtual. The third annual West Texas Breast Symposium is set for Saturday as a virtual event. The symposium will feature talks by medical professionals. Proceeds will benefit Pink the Basin, according to a press release. The first talk begins at 8 a.m. The last talk begins at 4 p.m. Registration is $75 for physicians, $30 for Midland Memorial Hospital employees, and $50 for others. To see the schedule or to register, go to midlandhealth.org. For more information, contact Charlize Rogers at 221-3220 or charlize.rodgers@midlandhealth.org. Local businesses receive Texas Mutual dividends. Texas Mutual Insurance Company has distributed a little more than $8.7 million in dividends to 945 Midland County businesses, according to a press release. Statewide, the company paid $330 million in dividends to 57,000 policyholders. The dividends were paid 2 months ahead of schedule to support businesses during the coronavirus pandemic. Through our dividend program, we're able to provide the economic boost many of our policyholders and their communities need during this critical time, said Ron Simmons, Texas Mutual Board Chairman. The dividend program, which was started in 1999, allows Texas Mutual to share its success with policyholders who display a commitment to preventing workplace accidents and helping injured workers return to work, according to the release. Salvation Army to sign up angels. Salvation Army of Midland soon will be signing up children 12 and younger for the annual Angel Tree. Parents or legal guardians would need to provide valid ID, children's birth certificates, and proof of income. Sign-ups will be 9 a.m. to noon and 1 to 4 p.m. October 5 through 16 at 600 East Wall Street. For more information, call 683-3614. Firefighters doing virtual fill the boot. The International Association of Firefighters and Professional Firefighters Association of Midland Local 4405 are doing a virtual fill the boot, which will take the place of the annual in-person campaign for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Instead of placing donations in boots held up by Midland firefighters at intersections across Midland, residents can donate at https://filltheboot.donordrive.com/participant/Midland. The virtual campaign continues through the end of the year, said Greg Wells with Midland Local 4405. Their goal is $5,000, according to the website. City watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, September 25th, 2020, Section A. Former OCA teacher charged and booked. Boone posts bail totaling $150,000. A former 50-year-old Odessa Collegiate Academy teacher was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 3:12 p.m. Wednesday, jail records show. William Hikes Boone has been charged with 2 counts of sexual assault, a second-degree felony, and improper relationship, a second-degree felony. Jail records show that Boone had 3 bonds totaling $150,000, and he posted bail later Wednesday. Boone was previously arrested and booked into the Midland County Detention Center August 25th. He posted bail August 31st, a member of the Midland County Detention Center Records Department said over the phone Thursday afternoon. Ector County ISD Communications Officer Mike Atkins said over the phone Thursday afternoon that Boone resigned and he is no longer employed by the district. In a previous Odessa American article, the affidavit sworn by Terry Haskell of the Ector County ISD Police Department stated on or about August 8th, Principal James Ramage was called by two former students of the school. The students gave him information involving a former student called Kylie, not her real name. The affidavit stated, the former students who called Ramage graduated from OCA. One of the former students told Mr. Ramage that she had received a text from William Boone, a former teacher, and he was venting that Kylie was going to college. Mr. Boone said he was going to miss her and it was like a breakup. The former student said that she was told that William Boone had feelings for Kylie, the affidavit details. Boone was reportedly interviewed by Henkel August 10th. He reportedly told Henkel that he had never kissed Kylie and had never been to her house. He said that he doesn't know where she lives. He said that they used an app on the phone to communicate with a group of students, the affidavit stated. Henkel reportedly interviewed the student, and the student provided Henkel with copies of a chat that Boone had sent to the student over the app. The chat was from William Boone to the student in which he told her that he was falling in love with Kylie. He told the student that they had kissed after graduation and she got scared. He said that he showed up to Kylie's house when her parents were gone, the affidavit stated. Kylie was reportedly taken to Harmony Home for a forensic interview. Kylie stated during the interview that she was one of Boone's former students at OCA. She also detailed in the interview that Mr. Boone had engaged in several sexual acts at school with Kylie between January 2020 and March 2020 while she was a student at the school. Kylie reportedly detailed that it started out with Boone kissing her. Boone then reportedly progressed to touching her on the breasts, over and under her clothing. Kylie stated Boone then progressed to pulling down her pants and digitally penetrating her vagina, the affidavit stated. Mr. Boone then progressed further by performing oral sex on her in the room, and also then Mr. Boone was masturbating while performing oral sex on Kylie in the classroom. Kylie said that he ejaculated on the floor. She said Mr. Boone would clean up the room and she would leave. She also said that on the 4th of July that Mr. Boone came to her house and knocked on her door, but she didn't open the door. The affidavit stated a criminalistics unit from the Odessa Police Department was called to Boone's classroom at Odessa Collegiate Academy. An alternate light source was used in his room. There were spots on the floor, his chair, his desk, and the wall that were detected with the light. The spots were swabbed by the technicians for evidence for presence of DNA, the affidavit detailed. Kylie stated in the affidavit that some of the acts were performed at his desk. Paraprofessional of the Year. Library Clerk Shares Her Love of Books by Ruth Campbell. Paraprofessional of the Year Starla Redwine strives to make reading fun and engaging for students at Goliad. Redwine has worked in Ector County ISD for 10 years total and is in her fourth year as library clerk at Goliad Elementary School. For her efforts, she was recently selected as the Paraprofessional of the Year for Ector County ISD. I was shocked, Redwine said in a phone interview. I was like, what? Who would nominate me? But I thought it was really awesome. She added that she thinks there are many other paraprofessionals who do wonderful things and work harder than she does. Making connections with the students is what Redwine enjoys most about her job. You read them a book, and then you do an activity, and it makes a connection with that book, so they always think about that book. We have a book called Extra Yarn, so I taught them how to finger knit in the upper grades. Then we made sweaters on popsicle sticks for kinder through second, Red Wine said. Every time her students see yarn, they are reminded of that book and ask her if she's going to read it to them that year. This year, Red Wine sees about 60 to 75 students a day. She has students from 30 to 45 minutes at a time, and she welcomes every grade level. We have pre-K. That's a little extra, too. They're fabulous. They're a lot of fun, Red Wine said. Last year, they would read a book, participate in an activity, and then discuss the book. Now they watch a book online. When the upper grades read, they use typing.com, which teaches keyboarding, coding, and digital literacy, according to its website. They can either type when they come in here or read a book on Epic, a digital library for students. Then I will steer them toward what they like to read about, Red Wine said. We also do Discovery Education, which has a lot of wonderful videos. Reading, she said, is the basis of everything in life. Students have to learn to read and do math. She enjoys reading to youngsters and then helping them learn vocabulary. It's better to read with a book in hand. They can't see your facial expression with the mask and shield. They can see your eyes, but it's not the same, Red Wine said. A native of Big Lake, who has spent most of her life in Odessa, Red Wine and her husband Michael have three sons. I've always liked to read. The library is my friend. Books are my friends. I love to read, and I like to read an actual book. I prefer an actual book over a Kindle or iPad, she said. Goliad has a little free library outside the school and inside the library. The books that I put in there are sanitized. Our education foundation fills it up quite often also, and it's fabulous. I love the little free library because they can get books 24/7 out there. They can't check them out, but they can come and trade them and stuff, she added. Goliad principal Christabel Gonzalez said Red Wine is like a ray of sunshine. They say to stay close to people who feel like sunshine. Mrs. Red Wine is that person, Gonzalez said in an email. Mrs. Red Wine always has a smile. She's eager to teach her students, and her passion for reading and learning is evident. She implements any new learning and integrates technology to keep students engaged. Our Grizzlies are blessed to have such an outstanding librarian who always goes above and beyond to make reading fun. Doctor Talks Positivity Rate by Michael Merlot. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan spoke on the different local COVID-19 positivity rates during a Thursday virtual hospital briefing. Saravanan said that while the cumulative county positivity rate is accurate, a 1 week or 2 week county positivity rate would be difficult for them to get. It's hard for the county to release a true positivity rate for the whole county because they would have to have the information from every test done in the county. They have to have all the negative tests and all the positive tests, total number of tests, before they can release a positivity rate. That's much more difficult for them to do in real time, he said, adding that maybe some providers are not reporting all of their tests. Saravanan also spoke on the positivity rate of the city's free testing. They were able to do about 97 or so tests last week, and their positivity rate was also about 4%, which is much lower than when the last round of city's testing was. He said that before, the city's positivity rate was previously around 14%. While ORMC has a cumulative positivity rate of about 13.4%. Their positivity rate for the last week is down to 4%, said ORMC President Stacy Brown. The Ector County Health Department website detailed Wednesday that the county positivity rate is at 17.39%, with 3,102 confirmed positive cases, 1,650 probable positive cases, and 623 active cases. While 4,032 people have recovered from the virus, 97 Ector County residents have died from COVID-19 related complications. The health department also messaged an MCH representative detailing that Buena Vida Nursing and Rehabilitation has 14 active COVID-19 cases, 72 recovered, and 10 deaths. Deering's Nursing and Rehabilitation has 13 active cases, 76 recovered, and 15 deaths. Focused Care at Odessa has 7 active cases, 23 recovered, and 7 deaths. Sienna Nursing and Rehabilitation has 1 active case, 60 recovered, and 15 deaths. Parks Senior Living has 4 active cases, 7 recovered, and 1 death. And Madison Medical Resort has 3 active cases with 13 recovered patients. A Wednesday Medical Center Hospital press release detailed that out of 1,506 total COVID-19 cases, 31 positive patients are in the hospital, 23 are on 8 central isolation unit, 8 are in the critical care unit, and 3 of those patients are on ventilators. Of the 31 in-hospital patients, 1 is from Focused Care at Odessa, 2 are from Deering's Nursing and Rehabilitation, 1 from Alpine, 2 from Crane, 1 from Midland, 4 from McCamey, 1 from Rankin, and 1 from Ward County. 13 of our 31 COVID patients today are either from the nursing home or out-of-county transfers, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said. Tippin also detailed that 14 tests are pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown reported that ORMC has tested 3,392 people, with 455 testing positive. 4 patients are in the hospital, 3 are in the ICU, with 2 on ventilators. 2 of the patients are from Big Spring and 2 are from Ector County, Brown said. The medical professionals also spoke on the importance of continuing COVID-19 precautions like wearing masks and urged people to get their flu shots. The next free COVID-19 testing is from 9 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at Sherwood Park. More information regarding the testing can be located at https://tinyurl.com/y63g2pqn, and the ECHD website can be located at https://tinyurl.com/wbvll46. COVID-19 news. Midland County, 3,636 confirmed, 82 deaths. Texas, 723,919 confirmed, with 5,860,833 tested. Total Texas deaths, 15,267. U.S. cases, 6,916,292 total confirmed, and 201,411 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. ECISD reports 5 new COVID cases. Ector County ISD reported 5 new positive COVID-19 cases Thursday. one employee from Alamo STEAM Academy, one employee from Bowie Middle School, one employee from Jordan Elementary, one student from Ector Middle School, and one student from Knoll Elementary. Quick hits. Fundraiser, caravan, and funfair. The Ector County Republicans have scheduled a Back the Blue fundraiser and funfair Saturday at their headquarters, 707 North Jefferson. A pancake breakfast will take place from 9 to 11 a.m. Cost is $10 per person and free for kids under the age of 8 and all law enforcement and first responders and their spouses and children. All proceeds will benefit the Odessa Police Department and Ector County Sheriff's Department. A Trump Freedom Caravan, organized by Texit, is scheduled from 2:30 to 4 p.m. starting at Music City Mall, JCPenney's parking lot. The route will leave MCM to Midland on Highway 191, get off at Loop 250 in Midland, and head back down through Highway 80 to Odessa and end at ECR headquarters. The Family Fun Fair will take place from 4 to 8 p.m. There will be jumpers, music, games, celebrity dunking booth, food trucks, antique cars, and meet the OPD, OFD, ECSO officers. Visit www.facebook.com/Ector County GOP. MC Fire Department receives state compliance notification. The Midland College Fire Department is the training site for the college's Fire Academy Firefighter Certificate Program. Even though the MC Fire Department serves only as a training site, it still has to meet the same state compliance measures as city fire departments. After a recent inspection, the Texas Commission on Fire Protection sent the college a letter stating that the MC Fire Department had no noted violations. "We may be small, but we are supercharged with high-quality faculty and staff who are perfectionists when it comes to fire safety, training, maintenance of equipment, and record-keeping," Carmen Edwards, MC Dean of Health Sciences, said. The program is led by Department Chair Mark Kuhn, and courses are taught by both Kuhn and instructor Gary Glass. Both of these gentlemen are former firefighters themselves and are committed to training to the highest standards, Edwards said. "We take pride that all of our programs simulate real-life situations as much as possible. That means that our training facilities must meet the same requirements as those that students will encounter once they pass licensure and certification exams. We prepare students to take the Texas Commission on Fire Protection Basic Suppression Exam that certifies individuals for entry-level firefighter positions in Texas," Kuhn explained. "We will all benefit from their efforts as they move into employment as certified firefighters in our West Texas communities." Local news roundup. Trade days. Briar Patch Trade Days has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday at the Ector County Coliseum, Buildings D and E, 4201 Andrews Highway. The Humane Society of Odessa will also conduct a pet adoption. Visit tinyurl.com/Y5N7EK3W. Community Service Hours Cleanup. The Odessa Teen Court will meet to clean up the newest lot adopted through Keep Odessa Beautiful from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, west of Hayes Elementary, 1101 East Monahans. This is a great opportunity for those who need to complete their community service hours. Bring a friend or family member and have your hours doubled. Water will be provided by OTC, and Keep Odessa Beautiful will provide gloves and trash bags. For more information, call 335-3352 or email rgrisham@odessa-tx.gov. Fiddlesticks Farms. Fiddlesticks Farms, 5610 East County Road 120 in Midland, has scheduled its fall festival opening Saturday through November 24th. Activities include spiderweb climb, tetherball, old roper, pig races, gemstone mine, learning barn, cornfield maze, jumping pillow, old-fashioned hay rides, farm animals, pumpkin patch, camping opportunities, shopping, food, and more. September and October hours are 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturdays and from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sundays. November hours are from 1 to 6 p.m. Saturdays and closed Sundays. For tickets or more information, visit fiddlesticksfarm.com. Principals and Teachers Encourage Pre-K by Ruth Campbell. Because 65% of students in pre-kindergarten arrive unprepared, Superintendent Scott Murray and Ector County ISD are conducting a blitz to bring more youngsters into the fold. Along with Murray, Carver Early Childhood Center Principal Sherry Palmer, Lamar Early Childhood Center Principal Mary Jane Hutchins, Dion Paquette, a teacher at Carver, and Jennifer Merriman, a teacher at Lamar, participated in an ECISD live event called Pre-K in the Pandemic. Based on research, Murray said, it's known that pre-kindergarten experiences are critically important to children's development. The first 4 years from 0 to 4 are critical in the development of a child's mind, he said. 20% of the students who were expected to attend pre-kindergarten in the district are not enrolled. That is of significant concern to us, Mary said. We are spending this week making sure we are reaching out to every single family in ECISD that has a 4-year-old. Starting her 10th year at Carver, Palmer has been in education almost 4 decades. She said pre-kindergarten is the most amazing thing she's ever done in her life. Their young brains are curious, Palmer said. Paquette is in her 32nd year of teaching, all in ECISD, and this is her 20th year in pre-kindergarten. She has taught pre-K through 3rd grade and was a reading recovery teacher at one point. Hutchins started at Lamar 24 years ago as a teacher and is now in her 3rd year as principal. She added that students are willing and eager to be in school. They're excited, and they're excited to be here. They learn so much when they come to us at the beginning of the year, Hutchins said. Merriman has been at Lamar for 9 years and said it is pure joy to come to work there every day. Pre-K is my passion, and I just consider myself so lucky to be able to come to school every day with them and to get to do this every day, Merriman said. Hutchins said pre-K is not daycare, but is high-quality education. The school builds the foundation for children to learn to read, write, learn math, colors, shapes, make friends, raise their hands, and take turns, among many other lifelong skills. We are academically based. We build a strong academic foundation from day one, Hutchins said. Palmer said pre-kindergarten students really learn, and there are guidelines that early childhood campuses have to follow called the Texas Pre-K Guidelines, which she said is a robust curriculum. On a typical day, Paquette said pre-kindergarten students are greeted by their teachers, brought in for breakfast, and there is a teacher and teacher's assistant talking to the student the whole time. Then it's time for circle time, where students talk about colors, shapes, counting on a number line, and other items. We're building tons and tons of language just in that 20 to 30 minute circle time to start their day, Paquette said. Then we move into small group activities, sitting at a table with a teacher and the teacher's assistant, who is a second teacher in the classroom. They are getting tons and tons of small group instruction. They are learning to hold a pencil and crayon correctly so they can write their name. Merriman said the teachers are trying to tap into the natural, inquisitive nature of students. We use that to strengthen all of those foundational skills. We want to boost that self-confidence as they learn that mistakes are opportunities to learn, and they can grow because of that. So they take more risks. They recover faster, and they're more willing to challenge themselves just because we're doing things and presenting concepts in a play-based, developmentally appropriate way, Merriman said. She added that play is a real way to learn. When you're teaching, you don't want to overwhelm them. You want to do it in a way that attracts them to the activity so that they're interacting with materials that we have in the classroom, Merriman said. Paquette said she remembers as a reading recovery teacher, she would work with students who were well below grade level on their reading. The biggest problem they had was comprehension, and the reason they couldn't comprehend what they were reading is because their vocabulary was so limited, and they didn't have a lot of academic words in their vocabulary. They just had the basic words in their vocabulary to get by, and it's so very important at an early age to build their vocabulary and to teach them words that you wouldn't think about, Paquette said. Last week, she said they were talking about animal habitats. So if your child went to pre-K last week, they know what a cave is and what a hollow log is. Merriman said they make math part of what they do every day at Lamar. This week, she said they are focusing on shapes. The principals and teachers at both schools noted that they really care about the children and the priority is keeping them safe. They urged parents who are unsure to contact the campus to get their questions and concerns answered. Murray has noted that there are all kinds of safety protocols in place at all the schools, and that was reinforced by Palmer and Hutchins. Merriman said they went through every routine and procedure in the classroom, so when children arrive, they get a fun no-touch greeting, and they sanitize and wash their hands. What is great is we're keeping them safe and keeping safety protocols, but we're still doing pre-K, Merriman said. We're still offering these hands-on activities. We're still doing play-based. We're not just, here's a piece of paper, don't touch anything. We've found ways to make it appropriate for our kids so that they can really get that pre-K experience and get those big foundational skills that they need to be ready for kindergarten. Paquette said she thinks it's important for families to understand that teachers are very passionate about what they do, and their classrooms are a home away from home. I want to be in a nice, clean place. We take very good care of our rooms, and the children are delivered breakfast. Then at lunch, lunch is delivered, so they're sitting in the same place they were for breakfast, and the tables have been cleaned 3 or 4 times between breakfast and lunch. Restrooms, for the most part, are in our classrooms. We're not sharing those with any other class. ECISD is providing a bottle of water per child per day, so they aren't using the water fountains. Murray said pre-kindergarten is not mandatory in Texas, so the state does not fully fund pre-kindergarten. Eligible students are mainly from economically disadvantaged families. Murray said that makes up about 60% of the district. For those families, he said, pre-kindergarten is free. If a child is not eligible, Murray said they can still attend, but the district charges $200 a month because the state does not provide funding. The state does provide funding with children in kindergarten through 12th grade. I don't know that you can really put a price tag on the foundation that they build, Hutchins said. $200 a month. I think it's a bargain, too. Palmer said when Murray was asked why he would want to come to ECISD, he said, why not? She asked the same question of sending children to pre-K. Palmer said all the measures have been implemented to make sure the children are safe. We have certified teachers and aides in every classroom. We love your child. We have a rigorous curriculum. Every child will have growth that comes through. Every child, we can guarantee that. Every child will be different academically and socially from the very first day to the last. We invite you to call us, have the conversation with us. We invite you to give us the chance, Palmer said. Pre-K is vital. tinyurl.com/y25dwvyk. ECISD homepage, ectorcountyisd.org. Pre-K in the pandemic, tinyurl.com/yxvgzf9f. Odessa woman dies in two-vehicle collision. A 58-year-old Odessa woman died in a two-vehicle collision in North Odessa. The reported fatal collision happened around 8:19 a.m. Thursday near the intersection of 91st and Andrews Highway, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that 36-year-old Jose Carrasco of Odessa was driving a 2015 Ford F-250 North on Andrews Highway, while 58-year-old Annabelle Ramos of Odessa was driving a 2006 Chrysler 300 West on 91st Street. Ramos failed to yield the right-of-way and collided with the F-250, the press release stated. Ramos was transported to a local hospital and later pronounced dead by medical personnel. Next of kin have been notified. There were no reports of any other injuries, and the investigation continues. Obituary and death notices for Friday, September 25th. Tony Hooper. Tony Hooper, 59, of Odessa, passed away September 22nd. Funeral services were held Friday, September 25th at Crossroads Fellowship, with Dr. Griffin Jones officiating. Interment followed at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home in Odessa. Tony Hooper was born in Odessa to Betty and Don Hooper, November 9th, 1960. He married Linda Smith in 1981 in Sonora. Tony is preceded in death by his wife, Linda, his parents, Don and Betty Hooper, and in-laws, Bobby and Joe Neal. He is survived by his children, Whitney Hooper, Jolie Gibson, and husband, Brody, and Colt Hooper, all of Odessa. Also by three grandchildren, a host of siblings, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Death notices. Daniel Danny Beltran. Daniel Danny Beltran, 40, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 20th. Mass was celebrated September 25th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Arrangements by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Marcus Crowe. Marcus Crowe, 84, of Andrews, died Monday, September 21st in Brownwood. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by McNett Funeral Home of Andrews. Vicki Joyce Vaughn. Vicki Joyce Vaughn, 61, of Odessa, died Monday, September 21st. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 26th at New Dawn Fellowship, 2110 East 10th. Visitation at the funeral home will be held Friday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. Brother William Darrow Vaughn is officiating. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.